We found out late yesterday that Chum had its first positive confirmed COVID-19 case in the shelter. Chum has had a plan in place for this for months. Obviously the folks at Chum, the clients there, are a very vulnerable population. Lee Stewart joins us this morning on the phone to talk about it a little bit. Hey, Lee, good morning, and thanks for being our guest.
Thanks very much, Lisa. Glad to be here.
I am surprised. Are you, that COVID had not turned up in your Chum folks population before this?
Well, we certainly were prepared for it. And yes, I am surprised that it has taken this long. I'm not surprised that it has happened. But as early as March, we put in really strong controls to keep COVID at bay as much as we could. We started screening people. We started increased sanitation with support from the state. In particular, we were able to get all the supplies that we needed. We had able to get good food into the shelter, make it possible for people to be. And they're isolated anyway, but we made it safer for them to be in the shelter. From the very beginning, we've just started planning about what happens when we know that COVID will arrive. Another thing that we did early on was separate out the most elderly people who were at Chum and put them in a separate hotel so they could be safer because they were a vulnerable population. And all along the way, we've been following the guidance from Minnesota Department of Health and St. Louis County Public Health about what we need to do and be ready. The state has been tremendously supportive of that, as has the local community. And so we knew the time was coming, and with the support of St. Luke's for testing and the isolation quarantine facilities that we've had set up with the county, we were able to roll out a plan yesterday and test about 52 people who are now in isolation, and that's where we stand. We're sanitizing the shelter right now and making sure that it'll be safe for people to return. And, I mean, that's the overview.
Lee, talk a little bit about, I mentioned that this is a very vulnerable population. Talk a little bit about some of the factors that make people experiencing homeless so vulnerable.
Well, when you think about overall health conditions and housing being such an important social determinant of health, if you don't have a place to live, that's probably the most risky vulnerability that there is. And then add to that that many of the people, about two-thirds of the people who are at Chum, have some form of disability. And maybe 20% may, you know, physical or developmental. Others have struggled with mental illness and addiction. So it's not really just an issue about housing, but it is about poor health overall and underlying conditions. We've just gotten the list of people who are creating the list for our Christmas Eve memorial. And the last I looked, there were 166 homeless people in the state of Minnesota who died over the course of the year. Over 25% of them are from Duluth. And when we look deeper into those data, almost half of the people who died in Duluth were Native American. And so this exposes a huge health disparity that results among people who are extremely impoverished, and then adding to the racial disparities contributing to that as well. So, not ready access to health care, no place to live, uncertain food, high-stress environment, all those things add up to make a vulnerable population.
And, of course, you know, so many of us feel that we're stressed, you know, as we work from our comfortable home offices, you know, or as we struggle to juggle our jobs and perhaps educating our kids at home. And I certainly don't, it's not a competition. I certainly don't want to make light of those things. But the folks experiencing homelessness are living with a level of stress daily that I think is really hard to comprehend if you've never been there.
Yeah, I can't really imagine it myself, but it was one of the reasons why I was really happy when the state of Minnesota, and really Minnesota has to be applauded. I don't know what other states have done, but within weeks of the announcement of the pandemic, the state put a fund together of $26 million, particularly to support homeless services, which was just terrific. And they kept adding to that fund. So the first time in my life where the last shall be first actually worked. The investment has been incredible. And so when we were asked, what do we need to make sure that the shelters are safe? So I asked about adding food, because with Damiano closed in the early parts of the pandemic, there was really no place for people experiencing homelessness to get something to eat. And so part of the stress of where shall I eat, where shall I sleep, how will I keep warm, how will I keep myself safe? So I found out that food was an eligible expense. And so I thought, how can I get food? And so I actually called up Tom Hansen at the Duluth Grill and said, can you give me a price point about half your normal one? Can we work on making sure that the nutritional needs of people in shelter are met? And he and his team put together a tremendous program. And since May, scheduled through the end of December, we've been able to have three hot meals a day at Chum. And so people have had that stress removed from them. But it's that type of cooperation between the state helping fund it and us being able to help local businesses and help their people keep employed and have people at Chum have really good nutrition that I think has also helped keep COVID a bit at bay.
Anytime you get to talk to Tom Hansen or eat a meal that Tom or his crew has prepared, you immediately feel better, no matter what is ailing you. Your stress, for the time that you are shoveling this stuff in your mouth, your stress does disappear. Yep. This I can speak to for sure.
Yeah, and it's been... You know, that's just one of the stories. I mean, we've had lots of other, I mean, even how we did the testing yesterday is we worked with St. Luke's to figure out what is really the best way for us to do on-site testing. Is it at Chum or is it once people are in isolation? And, you know, and we followed their advice and did it once we had moved people into the isolation facility. And it really, you know, worked. The wheels didn't fall off. We were ready for some, you know, more difficulty, but it actually went quite smoothly. But that's a testament to a lot of pre-planning, a lot of cooperation, a lot of problem solving, being smart about what's the most important thing here, putting the needs of people experiencing homelessness first, and just being practical. So I've had great partners with the county, Gina Bossert, Laura Birnbaum, Linnea Mersch, and the city, Adam Fulton, Ben Ventasso, Kate Vandale. Excuse me, that's my COVID cough.
you are at the moment, you are self-quarantining until the results of your test come back, because I'm sure much of your staff is in the same boat right now.
Well, my results have come back, and I'm actually positive, and so I am in that situation right now.
So you're going to have to administer via Zoom and the telephone, the old-fashioned way.
I'm getting to be an expert in remote control, and I'm a control freak, and so this is really good for me. So, I'm feeling well. So the main thing I want people to know is that, some people early on were saying, well, there's nothing being done. There's nothing being done. There's been tremendous amounts being done. I was just reviewing the data the other day, and Chum has probably received $1 million in support for what needs to happen at the shelter. Most of that is the food, of course, but a lot of it is remodeling for the kitchen and the bathrooms and making sure we have PPE and making sure we can sanitize and making sure that we have the staffing that's necessary. We've had to add a lot of staff to take care of both of the isolation and quarantine facilities. And, you know, that's all happened with state support. We always need local support, but we haven't. You know, there was a big fear that how would we cover, how would organizations like ours operate with all these extra demands? And I have to say, the state and the county and the city just stepped up, and also using the Federal CARES Act monies, said, make it happen, make it so, amen. And so, obviously, it's been disrupting, but my overarching sense is one of gratitude and cooperation.
Let me ask you a couple of things, and I realize that I'm struggling to ask this question without sarcasm, but my question is, I know that a concern that people might have in the general public would be, what would happen if someone, for example, suffering from addiction, suffering from mental illness, suffering from some form of mental impairment, got COVID and then didn't want to get tested, didn't want to wear a mask, didn't want to socially distance, then that person could be spreading COVID. You see why I'm struggling not to be sarcastic as I ask this question.
It doesn't need that. I mean, all I will first say is there are a whole lot of people around this country with no sign of any of that, what you're talking about, struggling with mental illness or addiction, who are refusing to wear masks, who are refusing to be tested, So it's not at all isolated to this particular group. And we have, everything we do about COVID right now in this country is voluntary. I mean, not everything, but we don't have a way to compel people into isolation and quarantine. People have the right not to do this or to do it. What our job is to make sure, and this hasn't happened very often. I mean, we have some people who haven't been able to maintain the isolation and quarantine, but honest, we've had so few positive cases that we've worked with. And again, first at Chum, but we've had probably 30 or 40 people experiencing homelessness who've had positive COVID, maybe not that many, maybe 20. In prior months that we've provided isolation and quarantine for, but in all of those cases, virtually all of them came from people who were here in Duluth from other areas of the county for medical or mental health procedures or addiction treatment, and then somehow contracted COVID and didn't have a place to go. And Chum's capacity, because we'd set up the isolation quarantine capacity, that's been the bulk of our work since the beginning of the pandemic. This is the first time that we've had, you know, the referral directly from Chum as a positive case. So we've been providing a service for the entire county since day one, and we're happy to do that. I mean, we're the organization that doesn't say no, and we are, you know, there's been enough investment in the capacity to make sure we can handle it. And so if there is a person, we make sure we stay in touch with them. We make sure they have masks. We make sure that they know. And a couple of times we've worked out special arrangements for people who don't want to be where we would prefer them to be, to help them be where they would prefer to be, like staying in their car, but with support, you know, or something like that. So we're really, you know, this is just the kind of the end point, I guess that's not the right way to think about it, but it's one way of us saying we're going to put the needs of people experiencing homelessness first, and we're going to meet them where they are. That's harm reduction. That's housing focused and trauma informed. And we're going to do the very best we can with each and every one.
Let me ask one final question, Lee. We have been talking, you and I and Deb Holman and other different folks from around the community, for gosh, decades now, about the need for more housing, the need for supportive housing for people. Do you have any sense that with this incredible cooperation that has emerged, that there might be an opportunity here to try to leverage some support to say, hey, as long as we're already putting some money into this, can we fix, you know, can we take a big step to fix this problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the major things that's happened in terms of that is that the Department of Health now really understands at the deepest level about housing as a social determinant of health, and looking at the expenses and the difficulties of what it's taken because people don't have housing to answer the demands of the pandemic. So I think there's certainly openings for a new conversation about that. One of the most exciting, there's actually one thing going on in the state right now, which is at the scale, talking about the scale that's needed, and that's Beacon Interfaith, which is our sister organization in the Twin Cities, has launched a campaign called Bring It Home Minnesota. And this is a campaign for rental subsidies. It's about a 5-year campaign. It's not going to happen soon, but it's addressing the 550,000 households in the state of Minnesota who pay 30% of their income for housing, you know, to work out a income eligible state analog to the housing federal Section 8, so that people have enough money to pay their rent. And that'd be a big chunk of the state budget, but that would be, I think, something like 3% of the state budget, but serving 12% of Minnesota households. So that's a good rate of return. And also would act as an economic stimulus for developers, so they would know that they would be able to build housing, because to build housing for the lowest levels of income. It's going to take rental subsidies. If those subsidies aren't available, people are not going to build the housing. And that's a whole long, complicated kind of thing. But I would urge people to check out Bring It Home Minnesota as a bold plan that is the only thing so far that has seriously addressed the issues of scale for me. So the fact that that there are a group of us who are cooperating on that across the state is another sign of the cooperation from not entirely from COVID, but from, you know, really critical thinking about, okay, what is it really going to take to solve this? And Bring It Home is not going to focus on people who are currently experiencing homelessness. It's the next people in the bubble that if they can't keep their rent payments up,
right,
they're going to be homeless. And, you know, addressing the issue, I mean, there was a person I was talking to yesterday about the Somali community in St. Paul. Many people, because they can't get a federal voucher, go to some other city or some other state and to get the voucher and bring it back to Minnesota. And that's just kind of, that's not correct. So how can we make sure that people can afford to pay their rent and that landlords have the money they need to operate the apartments, their properties, and that developers have the incentive to develop for the lower income people? To me, it's win-win-win. So that's...
I am excited to hear about some of these things. And of course, since you're going to be at home for a little bit, I know that you'll be easy to get in touch with, and we can maybe schedule some conversations in the future to talk about these things. Lee, take wonderful care of yourself. Congratulations to you and your team and your community partners for having such a great plan in place and also being able to keep people so safe up until now, and what you're doing to keep people safe, the entire community safe. And thanks again for being our guest this morning.
Thanks a lot. And we're keeping people safe everywhere.
Thanks, Lee.
Bye-bye.
Lee Stewart is the executive director of CHUM. She joined us this morning as our guest on Northland Morning.